Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, folks. This is the first Monday after the holiday, and I tell you, we had a wonderful Thanksgiving. We missed our oldest two boys, Josh and JT, but they were doing their thing. But man, Dalton came over and spent some quality time with his sisters and his little brother, and we had just a wonderful Thanksgiving. And then his wife got into town from seeing her family, and she came over, and they just had a blast. You know, we're all excited, truly. Dalton and Felicia's getting ready to have our first grandson, and he'll be born in January. So they were sitting around here having invitations for baby showers and all that, and it was just a good family time. It was a good time to count your blessings. And, you know, I was talking to my business partner and my skipper today, Dennis Dottel, and he was saying, man, I just took the weekend and I regrouped, Troy. Did a lot of me time. And I said, man, I did the same thing. Didn't really do business till yesterday and waited till after church and after the family had calmed down. And then I got on doing some stuff. And, you know, this is the cool time of the year when if you're truly focused on what's correct, then you start to realize you got to have balance. But there's another thing that we've got to focus on, too, and Seth gets into that today. There's no map. You know, when you're a leader, when you're a linchpin, you don't have a map to follow, per se. Now, you can look at history. You can see what worked for other linchpins. You can see what worked in different situations. But true pioneers, true artists, they are inspired by other people's work, but they have their own uniqueness to them. And that's the cool thing about today as we look at what's going on. You know, we got a little bit of Christmas music in the background. And as I sat here this morning, I want to read this first little paragraph in Seth's book. He says, you must become indispensable to thrive in the new economy. The best ways to do that are to be remarkable, insightful, an artist, someone bearing gifts to lead. The worst way is to conform and become a cog in the giant system. Now, part of that may sound redundant. You may say, Troy, we've been listening to you guys talk about this for a week. And that's a true statement. But redundancy is what causes us to remember. It's what gets us going. You know, I remember in the Marine Corps, it was the same thing over and over and over and over to where now it's second nature. See, anything that we do, we have to look at it and say, okay, I need to have this drilled into my brain. I am a leader. I am a linchpin. I'm not a cog. See, you've got to believe it in your heart. And it takes a little bit of time to work through some of the noise sometimes. Seth asks this question, what does it take to lead? You know, that may be a small sentence, but you may want to write that one down and analyze that a little bit. What does it take to lead? Seth writes, the key distinction is the ability to forge your own path, to discover a route from one place to another that hasn't been paved, measured, and qualified. So many times we want someone to tell us exactly what to do, and so many times, that's exactly the wrong approach. You know, I mentioned I was on the phone with my partner today. And, you know, as the majority equity owner of the company, as the CEO of the company, you know, he's the skipper of the ship. He kind of runs things. But he never surrounded himself with yes people. He surrounded himself with people that are willing to challenge the status quo, willing to question the obvious. And that's what linchpins do. So you've got to be able to go out there and say, okay, I don't see a path. I'm going to make one. I'm going to look around and see what other paths look like, and then I'm going to forge this one myself. It's really called discernment. It's being able to look at and see and understand where you're going. Seth writes this, you can't make a map unless you can see the world as it is. You have to know where you are, know where you're going before you can figure out about getting there. Linchpins don't have advantage. Yeah, you can have an objective. There's no doubt about that. You know, your objective can be, you know, to do 35,000 in volume by the end of the year, or to do 100,000 in volume next year. Like one of my friends that works for Dell, you know, his quota monthly, or not monthly, but quarterly, is about 5 to 6 million a quarter. You can have that. You can constantly be busting butt, taking care of business, doing what you've got to do. But at the end of the day, you don't really have a plan. You don't really have a map to get to that objective. You've got to forge the path. But most of us forge that path based on what our world perception, our world view is. Not saying that worldviews are bad. You know, this is something I've had to learn as a follower of Jesus Christ. I've had to learn that other people have a different worldview than mine. Seth talks about this. Matter of fact, Seth has a different worldview when it comes to spiritual things than I do. But it's fun to listen to him talk because he gives me such open perspective. See, linchpins look at what other people are doing. They listen to other people's insight. They open their eyes to see it through other people's lenses. Doesn't mean you got to agree with it, but it means you need to understand where they're coming from as well as they do. That's what sets you apart. When we think about this, we look at venture capitalists. Seth writes this: the venture capitalist has a worldview shaped by his experiences in funding dozens of companies over the years. The loyal employee has a worldview as well. She wants a stable place to work, and she believes in you. Even the lawyer and the competitor and the skeptic, and even your mother-in-law, each have their own worldviews, their own biases, their own expectation. See, as a linchpin, though, what you've got to do is you've got to disassociate yourself with the attachments of what your worldview is. I'm talking about when it comes to business. Seth writes this: a life without attachment and stress can give you the freedom to see things as they are and call them as you see them. God has blessed me. Part of it I learned in the Marine Corps. Part of it was something, it's a train. But God has taken the gift of discernment and blown it up a little bigger. Not saying that I'm right 100% of the time. But it's something that I've learned that with a little bit of meditation, a little bit of prayer, a little bit of due diligence, some of that old bounty hunting traits coming out and tracking and looking at things, all of a sudden, you're able to look beyond what the obvious is. And as a linchpin, this is important. I don't care if you're building your company or building your field team or just starting out in a brick-and-mortar business. You have to be able to go down that path. Let's say you want to start a brand-new website. Let's say it's a tattoo website. I want to go something way out in left field. You start researching the niche for tattooists. You could look at other websites and say, okay, I'm going to create it like that. Okay, that's pretty cool. Or you can say, I want something unique. I'm going to focus in on just female tattoos or just crosses or whatever the case may be. And you dig deep and you create your own unique authority. That's what linchpins do. You cannot follow the crowd and be a linchpin. You've got to be able to see clearly, and seeing clearly isn't easy. Seth writes this: it's difficult work, which is why it's rare and valuable. Seeing clearly, you write this down, this is good. Seeing clearly means being able to look at a business plan from a point of view of the investor, the entrepreneur, and the market, all those different. If you're in direct selling, and also seeing it from the field standpoint. See, one of the fun things about the position that I have is I get to be that kind of liaison. I get to listen to what the field has. I get to listen to what corporate, what our goals, what our business plan is, and I get to create something that will work for both parties. That is exciting to me on a daily basis. I'm constantly pushing and stretching my leaders to the point sometimes they get frustrated with me. I let them know I love them. See, the key is if they can be stretched, then I can learn more. Seeing clearly means that you're smart enough to know when a project is doomed or brave enough to persevere when your colleagues are fleeing for the hills. I want to say that one again. Seeing clearly means that you're smart enough to know when a project is doomed or brave enough to persevere when your colleagues are fleeing for the hills. This weekend I was analyzing some stuff that one of my old mentors, Rod Cook, put out. He put some stuff out about some companies that I called out about a year ago and said, man, their compensations aren't correct. There's issues here. There's issues there. You know, and I'm looking at that and saying, man, it makes you feel good when finally somebody that's the better than I am calls the shot. Then I had an email over on Facebook or whatever you call them, messages, where a guy said, you know, if you keep talking about this company, somebody's going to kill you. And I found that humorous because I hadn't really talked about this company. That was the funny part about this. I'd shot a video and connected to a investigative report out of Great Britain on this company. And yet this guy had taken it personal. And I looked at this and I thought, wow, what an interesting scenario here. So you can be a linchpin and realize you got to go out and forge your own path, or all of a sudden you can get an attachment and start blaming everybody else for what's going on. See, to see clearly, you got to get rid of that extra noise. See, a linchpin understands that getting angry about the battery in the microphone not working, or the bathroom not being cleaned, or the big client left and went somewhere else, okay, it isn't a big deal. There's nothing you can do to change that. See, the difference is the understanding that angry, being angry and attaching to the outcome of a situation that you have no control over, is nothing but defeating to yourself. It does nothing but hurt you. It does nothing but put you into a negative world. Matter of fact, if you guys have followed my blog over at MLM Help Desk over the last 18 months, the biggest post, now this is something that we've tracked, we've watched, the post that got the highest rankings, the post where our website was rocking through the roof, was on negative posts. Posts where we were being critical about companies. Posts where because of company situations, we called them out on it, people flourished and flocked to that. Now we got some great stuff on our other post, but it was funny because we have over 125 positive posts on companies, less than 50 companies that we list as high risk MLMs, and yet they're the ones that have had the most traffic. I had a daunting wake up call and realized I don't want this. I'm going to switch websites. I'm switching everything because our focus is to be a light out there where people can find positive information, but yet critical information, not on companies themselves, but what to look for. See, there's certain types of people that they're not going to be linchpins. They're going to flock and flourish to negativism. You cannot do that. They're like a fire. You start a small spark in a fire, and if you keep throwing fuel on it, no matter what kind of fuel it is, the fire gets bigger and bigger, hotter and hotter. And eventually it burns everything up around you. Negativism, people that flourish on negativism, is that type of person. We don't want to be that. We do not want to fall prey to negativism. That's not saying that you can't have a critical review periodically or a critical lesson with your team, but you have to understand that you cannot be attached to that outcome. You can't get caught up in the fire. See, there's some different elements to attachment and what can happen there. And I want to talk about that for a second. I want you to write this down. The first sign of attachment is that you try to use telekinesthetic type of mind control to remotely control what others think of you or your work. It's basically what happens when you care more about what others think about you than what you know is right. When that happens, you've become attached to the outcome. You cannot do that. You don't want to do that. The second sign of attachment is how you handle bad news. If bad news changes your emotional state or what you think of yourself, then you're attached to the outcome you receive. When I received this thing over the weekend where a guy says, well, you could die based on what you're saying about this company, I was pretty bold and wrote him back. I said, two things just happened. One, I'm going to take this as a veiled threat, so I've notified security over at Facebook. Number two, I'm going to address your concerns. I don't hide. I don't placate. I address them. Straightforward. See, you cannot let the world, the negativism of the world of any kind, hold you back from the linchpin that you should become. You have to learn to move through it and to move on. It's huge that we do this. Now, do we all do it? We all screw up every now and then. Seth uses the analogy of a pinball. Listen to this. We all do this from time to time, of course. Think about this for a second. You're playing pinball on a new pinball machine, and you see that the left flipper doesn't work the way you expect it will. You don't have an emotional meltdown when the ball drains. No, you notice it, you learn from it, and your next ball goes better. You have discernment. You can see what's happening and you can learn from it. The flipper isn't about you, and the ball draining down the hole is not a personal attack. It just is. See, there are certain things that you have to understand. When this guy came after me, he wasn't angry at me. He was angry because the company that he thought might be a good company, based on the information that he had at the time, looked good. When he ended up getting a different perspective than he thought was the actual truth, it caused him to get angry at himself, and he wasn't going about to push forward, so he pushed that towards me. When I get angry at Paige, it's usually not because of something she's done that's going to be detrimental to my life. It's because something got screwed up right then and there in my plan. Same thing with your children. See, we have to learn not to be connected to the outcome of things that we cannot control. If something's in our control, sure, we should become connected to it. But that's a difference. Sadly, what we do is we're like a romance novel, or better yet, we're like an epic adventure. We end up assigning motivations, plots, and vendettas to every action that we have, even when we don't need to. See, that's the hardest thing. I have friends of mine that truly live on the what's in it for me concept, which is totally against what Seth teaches. And when people are that way, doesn't make them bad, makes them different. But you come to find out that they're not really the different ones you are. See, when you think as a servant leader, when you think as a linchpin and your whole focus is what can you do for others, all of a sudden, life starts to take on a new perspective. All of a sudden, you start looking and you say, wow, there's a broader world out there. One of the things I like about the company that I'm with is that we work as a collective team, but separately and individually, all different personalities. It's not about teamwork. It's about being a team player. It's about looking at the overall mission, finding out what you're supposed to do in that mission, and just doing it. That's the way your direct selling business should be going. That's the way your personal business. Your employees should have the ability to make some command decisions. I was at Target over the weekend. My baby girl wanted a new pair of shoes, and she said, Dad, I think they're on sale for 75% off. I said, well, let's go take a peek. So we run up there. She shows me the shoes. Every shoe in the area, there's two different signs. One says 75% off. The other one says $10 each, and this pair's $13. I go up to the counter, he rings in the shoes, they come up to $13, $14 with tax, and I said, okay, here's my question. The signs back there on this shelf for all these brands of shoes state 75% off, but yet all the shoes have a tag that says clearance $10.99. I said, why are these higher? Well, I don't know, sir. I said, well, can you check and see if somebody can answer this question for us? He said, no, sir, why don't I just market what the price is on the rest of the shoes and you guys just have a great Thanksgiving. I said, sold. He made a command decision because Target allows their cashiers certain leeway. He wasn't attached to the outcome. He didn't get upset because I was questioning the price. He became a win-win situation. Not every situation can be win-win. We all know that. But in this case, it was. It was a great way to look at where he was at. I think he's a linchpin. Listen to what Seth writes here. I think this is good. When our responses turns into reactions and we set out to teach people a lesson, we lose. We lose because the act of teaching someone a lesson rarely succeeds in changing them and always fails at making our day better or our work more useful. Let's read that again. When our responses turn into reactions and we set out to teach people a lesson, we lose. We lose because the act of teaching someone a lesson rarely succeeds at changing them and always fails at making our day better or our work more useful. That's the truth. See, I've got a good friend of mine, and over the weekend over on Facebook I wrote, I'm thankful to live in the greatest country in the world with the most powerful military, something to that effect. And she writes back, oh, it'd be great whenever we live in a world where there's no need for armies. Now, I got two choices there. I could write back logically and show for the last however many thousands of years we've been on this earth, no matter if you're an old-time believer or a new-time believer in the age thing, there's always going to be wars. There's always going to be somebody out there with their own personal agenda. Or I could write back like I did, Hey, I hear what you're saying, sister. Because wouldn't it be great if you didn't have any wars? I mean, think about it. Why would I try to change her opinion when basically deep down inside, who wants war? But see, I didn't try to change her. I didn't try to tell her, let's look at this logically. Let me show you something. I'm not going to change her ideas. God love her for the way she is and who she is. What we've got to look at is how can we change ourselves? What are the two reasons that seeing into the future, having discernment, knowing where you're going is so daggum difficult? Here it is. Guys, this is a one sentence that Seth writes, and I thought, man, this is just solid, rock solid stuff. Listen to this. The two reasons for seeing the future is so difficult is this. Attachment to an outcome combined with the resistance and fear to change. I'm going to say it again. Attachment to an outcome combined with the resistance and fear of change. See, we want to grab hold of the outcome. We want to hold on to it. Good, bad, or indifferent. We want to hold on to it because of the fear of change. I have the fear of change. You know, it's not a big deal. Paige and I were talking about this over the weekend. We just had a great time together. But we're talking about our potential relocation to the state of Texas. Because with this new career change that I made, eventually it would make more sense to be around Austin where headquarters is, so I can use that as my base of operation, not strain the communication lines and all that good stuff. Well, we're sitting here saying, but we made this decision to raise our kids in a small town. That small town just happens to be on a barrier island in the panhandle of Florida. And we're saying, but we love it. We have a beautiful home. We owe tens of thousands on the home, not hundreds or millions of thousands now. We got a great lot in a great town. We're a block off the beach or a couple blocks from the bay. The kids know everybody. You walk into the Walmart and they say hi by your first name. You walk into the grocery store, it's hi by your first name. If your girls or your sons have situations, usually they know somebody in Walmart or Target or somewhere that they can say, hey, can you help me out? You go to breakfast at the same watering hole every doggone morning, and you know the guys by their name. You know what they do for a living. You know what their kids have been up to. So to make a change is like freaking, especially when you go through it through our life perspective. We came from a big city. After high school, everybody split up. We went to a pretty good-sized mega church. Nobody knew anybody. And we started snickering. I said, is that fear of change that's holding us back? Well, not totally, because some of the girls, our teens, don't want to leave yet because of their friends. So, I mean, it's a slow process. It's not something we're going to do today, but within 12 months probably. But then we started narrowing down, well, if this is what we like here, then wouldn't it be easy to find that in Texas, in a suburb of Austin, somewhere outside of town? Oh, there you go. Great idea. So you cannot be attached to the outcome, and you cannot fear change. Change is good. Change is positive. Change is something we need. So you got to change yourself, don't you? You can't change the outcome. So you start changing yourself. Listen to what Seth writes. The challenge is in understanding when our effort can't possibly be enough and in choosing projects and opportunities that are most likely to reward the passion we bring to the situation. That sounds like being in business for yourself. That's like leading a large organization. See, when you realize that there's a boatload of people around you, when you realize that it's a law of connection, when you realize there is no Lone Ranger, when you realize that everybody else has something that they want to see accomplished in the big scheme of things, then you got to win. See, if there's no way in the world that you can please the customer with a reasonable amount of effort, perhaps it's best to accept the situation and stop killing yourself. See, sometimes, guys, there's just people that are more mixed up than we are, and we can't change them. And I don't mean that as a negative, because they're thinking the same thing. They're saying, man, that guy's more mixed up than I am. I can't change him. But yet we want to combat and we want to fight because we want to end up on top. We want to end up in control. We want to be the dominant one. We can't be that way. I'm not saying be a pacifist. There's times when you just got to tell them the way it is and you move on. but you've got to be able to be a linchpin. You've got to know when you can change the outcome of something and when you can't. See, once you hit that perspective, once you hit that level, the sky's the limit. I want you on a piece of paper. I want you to draw a line in the middle of a piece of paper, up and down, put an arrow, make it an arrow, up and down arrow. And then right in the middle, do another one, put a little arrow sign on left and right. At the top arrow, I want you to put discernment. At the bottom arrow, I want you to write attachment. On the left arrow, I want you to write passive. On the right arrow, I want you to write passionate. Now, in the top left quadrant, write bureaucrat. In the lower quadrant, write whiner. Lower left quadrant. In the top right quadrant, write linchpin. In the lower right quadrant, write fundamentalist zealot. And now look at that for a second. Do you realize that when you look at this, and you're passive, on the passive side, you've got bureaucrats who want to please everybody. They have discernment, but they're trying to please everybody. Or at the bottom, you have this passive whiner who's attached to the outcome. But yet, what is worse? A passive whiner that's attached to the outcome, or a fundamental zealot that's passionate, attached to the outcome, and isn't going to change no matter what? You could show them in black and white where they are wrong, and they're going to go and fight for their cause no matter what. But then you've got up here in the upper right-hand corner a passionate, discerning linchpin who understands the position that they're in. This is what you want to do. You want to end up there. Now, you're going to know which one of these represents you at this moment of the game. That's not bad. You've just got to realize where you need to go. You need to be moving to that upper right-hand quadrant. You want to be passionate about the position that you hold and discerning enough to know if it's right or wrong. Is it going to benefit you and the outcome of the project, of the mission, of the objective? Or is it going to deter you in reaching what you want to reach? See, this is the key. This is where you want to be. You want to focus forward. Focus on being that linchpin. Listen to this. This is how a passionate, discerning linchpin acts. A brilliant linchpin does her art by understanding the other side of the other side as honestly as anybody can. Only by seeing the world through clear eyes can she possibly craft a negotiation strategy that works for everyone. I've been in negotiations with multi-million dollar corporations. I've sat at negotiation tables with unions and employees. I've sat at negotiation tables between men and wife, pastors and committees, CEOs in the field force. At the end of the day, it truly is about becoming a linchpin. See, it's never possible to fit all the way in. Never possible for everything to be all right. The problem with being outwardly focused is that we have no center, nothing to return to. The problem with outward focus is there's no compass, no normal, no way to tell when we're in balance. A linchpin understands that everything starts from within. And once you have control of that, once you realize it's okay to have a little bit of fear. It's okay when you're not in control. It's okay to go down a path that's never been gone down before. That's when you'll start to see massive growth like you've never seen before. Folks, I love having y'all on the show. Tomorrow, Making the Choice, we're in Seth Godin's book, Linchpin. You can learn more about Seth at sethgodin.com. Live life like it's an epic adventure. I'll see you at the top. Be back here tomorrow morning for Radio for Your Mind. Bye now.